Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Joining me now from New York is the RZA, rapper, producer, and composer, the driving force behind the hugely influential martial arts-inspired hip-hop empire, the Wu-Tang Clan. Born Robert Fitzgerald Diggs, he's had success as a solo artist under several performance names. Prince Rakim, Bobby Digital, the Resurrector. He's scored movies including Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill and the anime series Afro Samurai. His 2005 book, The Wu-Tang Manual, explained the history and mythology of the Wu-Tang Clan. His new book out yesterday is The Tao of Wu. The RZA, welcome to On Point, sir.
How you doing, Tom? Thanks for having me here.
It's great to have you. And I have to say, I learned a lot in this book. I really didn't know the background. You've been a striver and a seeker for a very, very long time. Maybe a kid in mean streets, but always looking for something more, something else, something beyond.
You always had a very inquisitive mind, and it has led me to keep looking and keep searching to find myself and to find the meaning of life and the meaning of others.
You know, I was struck by how you draw from the Quran, from the Bible, from the Buddhist sutras, certainly from martial arts, but you're very willing and ready to draw from horror films and kung fu films as well. Is there anything you don't draw from?
Well, I try to, you know, look at a lesson a day, you know, keeps the evil away. It's like as many signs, you know, the Quran says, there are signs every day, but most men don't see them. But a wise man should be able to see them. So I always look and listen and try to, you know, dissect or, you know, pull out the grain of truth that's in everything.
The Tao of Wu is your book. What's the Tao and what's Wu?
Well, the word Tao actually means the way. The way is a path that we travel. Wu is from Wu-Tang, of course. Mm-hmm. And actually, Wu comes from the word Wu-Chi as well, which means no extremities. There's no limit. There's no boundaries. From Wu-Chi, we got Tai-Chi, which is the grand ultimate extreme. Most of everything we see, they say, comes from Tai-Chi, you know, yin and yang. Mm-hmm. But before Tai-Chi, there's Wu-Chi, where there's no extremities, where all things dissolve back into one.
I was struck all through this how you are drawing from and citing philosophers from all over the place. I mean, from Rumi to Lao Tzu, you're pulling it all in, wrapping it all together. I was just trying to get my head around how that happens for a kid with a very, very big family, living poor a lot of the time on Staten Island when you weren't in North Carolina with your beloved uncle Hollis there. But how you got your hands around this stuff? It started with Nation of Islam, if I read you right, that was kind of the first step toward a spiritual envelope for life.
Yeah, I would say it actually started first with the Holy Bible, of course, as a young man growing up. But when I got a hold of the what they call living mathematics, that became a key to help unlock the mysteries to me of everything. I now had a foundation in a formula of thought pattern that, no matter what I would encounter, if I apply this formula of thinking to it, I'll be able to derive the understanding of it. And the first thing was always to do the knowledge, to look, listen, observe, and respect what is being said, done, or presented to me. And by doing that, you know, whether it's good, bad, false, or truth, by observing it carefully and knowing the ledge of it, like the word knowledge, know the ledge, mm-hmm. or you won't, so you don't fall off the edge, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? By knowing the ledge of it, it helped me to first have a good foundation of how to think about things. And then wisdom would come second. Wisdom is the manifestation of the knowledge. Mm. It's that knowledge now going into action. And when I put it into action, then I could verify whether it's false or real. And that brings forth the understanding to see it clearly for what it really is.
You've got a plenty of sort of familiar hip-hop themes in your music, but this Nation of Islam thinking and teaching came in pretty early. In 1997, you had a cut called 12 Jewels from the album The Pick
the sickle and the shovel with the grave diggers at that time.
Yeah.
Let's listen a little bit to 12 Jewels.
I said a wise man don't play the role of a fool. The first thing a man must obtain is 12 jewels. Knowledge, wisdom, understanding to help you achieve freedom, justice, equality, food, clothing, and shelter. After this, love, peace, and happiness. He had the nappiest head. I told him total satisfaction is to achieve one goal in the scheme of things. He who roasts like a slave eats like a king.
The RZA there with the Gravediggers, 1997, and 12 Jewels. He joins us from New York. Do you find as big an audience for this kind of track, this kind of cut, which is about philosophy, wisdom, spiritual teaching, as for kind of the down and dirty in the street stuff?
Well, I want to say sometimes it don't seem as the same size audience, and sometimes it does. It's like different years and different times you will see people, you know, seeking, you know, good times, and some seeking philosophy and answers. So you see, hip hop has been a form of music that has come from being a big party music,
mm-hmm.
to club music, to social music, to political, to just braggadocious. It has all these different elements, and so at different times, I think different songs have more strength and more meaning. In 1997, when we did Wu-Tang Forever and the Gravediggers did the Pick the Sickle and the Shovel,
mm-hmm.
it seemed like that was a year of a good year to get out information, you know, to instill some wisdom into the people who had through music. And I think I took a chance at it. And we actually had some success, I would say. You know, the Wu-Tang Forever goes on to be 4 times platinum.
And
the
Gravediggers.
Yeah, some success. And the Gravediggers actually came with another their second gold album. And the first album was more hardcore and very, I would call it, violent therapy, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Scared therapy. But then the second album was more insightful and did a little more spirituality, and yet it still reached the sales of the first album and had increased upon the fan base and had the fans satisfied from having one side of the coin, which was dark and gory, then having another side, which is more light and enlightening.
Mm. The RZA quotes Rumi right at the top of his new book, The Tao of Wu, Let the Caller and the Called Disappear, Be Lost in the Call. We've got a lot of calls for you already. Maybe on the spirit side we'll come to it. Maybe on the music side, from Chicago, Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air with the RZA.
How's it going?
Pretty
How
well.
Doing, Jeff?
I wanted to ask the RZA what he thought about the progression of sampled music since 36 Chambers came out, and where it's headed, and whether he thinks, you know, it's been, overdone, and, you know, just where the progression of hip-hop and sample music in general is going.
Thank you, Jeff. All the way back to the beginning, to 36 Chambers, you use a lot of sampling. You use it kind of like a painter. What about the progression, the evolution?
Well, I think in the beginning, those samplers had limited time of sample. And we was dealing more with just a pulse and just one note of a beat. And it grew to have more sample time, to where we could get loops and bars, and then you could sample 24 hours straight. But what's happened, I think, in hip-hop, which I'm noticing, is that the generation now who grew up on hip-hop, we have a generation of musicians who now can play hip-hop, who has the vibe and feeling inside their instruments. And I think that as time go on, sampling will become more obsolete, because the people who are making hip-hop will have the ability to really create that sound without having to sample from old music. We sampled old music because, you know, we didn't have the musicians to play it, or we couldn't afford musicians, and the sampler has became our main instrument. But now that, like I said, people are picking up drums. You got, you know, rock and roll bands making hip-hop. We had an album called Chamber Music that came out earlier in the summer. That every beat was played by a band, but a lot of people said it sounds like it was all sampled.
Even though they were playing there, and you think the sampling's become what, more? I mean, that's still the baseline, though. I mean,
it's still a strong foundation of it. Mm-hmm. But remember, we always sampled a song that had a bass line, a drum, a horn, or something like that. Look at all the James Brown samples we took.
Mm-hmm.
We take one funky loop off it,
mm-hmm.
but now these loops can be played. People, like, you know, you got even Easy Mo B, who's a great producer, he plays drums. He plays just like the breakbeats. And when we did the 8-Diagram, he was in a studio, and he would play drums on some of my tracks. And so now we're not sampling from records. Let me put it that way. We no longer have to sample from old records. we now could sample from ourselves, from our own catalog, and from our own creativity.
You work with what you've got, and we hear the way the painterly use of sampling that you've always had. The RZA's with us from New York. His new book is The Tao of Wu. Have you followed the RZA from his early days, the Wu-Tang Clan from the days of Cream, Triumph, Protect Your Neck? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Flip you baseball cards for keeps. Mama said it's getting late and it's time to come eat. When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner. Shoot out the speakers with my guns, get Jurassic. Super bad, who am I? Dolomite Classic, the band who's back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the RZA, producer, composer, rapper, driving force behind the Wu-Tang Clan, about his spiritual journey through the Bible, the Quran, the Sutras, and Kung Fu. You can join the conversation. Have you followed the RZA through his alter egos, Prince Rakim, Bobby Digital, the Resurrector? Are you ready to follow his spiritual advice, his way? What do you make of the Tao of Wu? It's his new book out today. The RZA joins us from New York. You can join us as well at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. In the midst of all your seeking, and you've been a seeker clearly for a long time, Kung Fu and Shaolin stand out so, you know, remarkably. They're right there in all the kind of mythology that you all, built around the Wu-Tang Clan. You tell the story of how that really went into overdrive. It was late one night. You'd been out partying. You're in the back of a porno theater watching a Kung Fu movie. What happened there? What did you see? How did Kung Fu become so important to you and Shaolin, Wu-Tang?
Yo, Kung Fu movies was definitely fascinating on the screen to watch as a kid. But as I became a teenager, I just started hearing what the dialogue of the movies was saying and the ideas that they was trying to, you know, that they was talking about that helped build their Kung Fu skill and all this inner alchemy and inner Taoism. But one night, you know, partying, like we said, drunk out of our minds and needing somewhere to sleep, me and ODB, we stumbled into a old porn theater that would show porns and show Kung Fu flicks. And this time they had Kung Fu flicks running. And we went there actually to go to sleep and get some rest. We get in and I see the end of a movie. And it's just so exciting, the dialogue of what they're saying and the movements of it. And so it just woke me back up, and I wound up staying up for the second feature to see the first feature again. And it was called Shaolin versus Wu-Tang. And in this movie, the whole idea of Shaolin and Wu-Tang came and stuck in my head. And the idea was that Shaolin was the place which all Kung Fu springs from, the well from which all Kung Fu springs. But Wu-Tang was what they would call an offshoot of Shaolin, people who came and got the knowledge of Shaolin but took it to the mountains and meditated upon themselves and devised their own martial art. Shaolin was known as an external martial art, but Wu-Tang would start from the internal, inside yourself. So it was movies like The White Lotus, for instance, which we saw earlier, and I didn't understand why would the high priestess meditate all day to increase his Kung Fu. But once I seen Shaolin versus Wu-Tang, it helped explain that. Sometimes through meditation and using your mind to control your energy and your body and your chi, you build up the same strength as a man who would be out there sitting there lifting weights. There's different meditation forms of martial art, from Jin Yi to Tai Chi to Bak Hwa, that build up your internal organs and your internal strength. And it gives you the same strength as a external martial art, like Tiger Crane would be.
Mm. You know, the RZA is with us, then of the Wu-Tang Clan. His new book is The Tao of Wu. It's funny, back maybe around that same time, I was a very young man, maybe close, I don't know, to your age, living in Hong Kong. And one of the things I did to make ends meet was moonlighting, dubbing Kung Fu films from Chinese into English. And I'm sitting here thinking maybe you were sitting watching some of those in the back. But I was struck at how at your hunger to find meaning, even in a Kung Fu film, which a lot of people would just shrug off and say, oh, come on, that's just, you know, that's silly martial arts fluff. You were very, very hungry, maybe because, I don't know, maybe you didn't have other ways. You had to find a way up and out.
Yeah, it's, one thing I noticed, you know, and I reflect back on it, but I noticed that, you know, when we watched TV in those days in America, it wasn't a lot of channels. You know, HBO wasn't in every household. It was very rare that somebody had HBO. And the TV programming was limited. And when you see a martial art film, you had a chance to see a time in history that wasn't just what America, the Western world was showing us, you know. And especially as a young black man, you know, most of the black things on TV would mm-hmm. be some kind of slave, some kind of pimp. Not really these great heroes that, that you know, that would inspire you. But through the martial art films, I was seeing great heroes that inspired me. But yet still in the past, hundreds of years ago or 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gave me another perception of history. I mean, I was a big mythology fan as well, through Greek, Zeus, Hercules, and all that, or even the Norse from Odin and Thor and all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
These things had me fascinated as well. But then when I had the chance to see the Asian culture, I had a chance to see the same kind of timeline, but a different approach, a different way at it. And it just gave me a whole interest in trying to find out what was going on during that period of time, not only in Asia and Europe, but how about in Africa, or how about in other parts of the world, Australia. And I just started researching and looking more and more, looking at one thing, trying to help me understand another.
Another angle on a world that looked tough right outside the door. It was there right from the beginning. Here is from the 1993 album, Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers. That's Shaolin. Talk begins with two samples from Kung Fu films.
A game of chess is like a sword fight. You must think first, before you move.
Tone style is immensely strong and immune to nearly any weapon. When it's properly used, it's almost invincible.
Raw, I'ma give it to you with no trivia. Roll like cocaine straight from Bolivia. My hip hop will rock and shock the nation like the Emancipation Proclamation. With MCs,
hip hop going right up off the Lotus there, right up off Shaolin, in the first album of the Wu-Tang Clan, 1993. Hank is on the line from Morrisville, Vermont. Hank, you're on the air.
Great topic today, and I actually saw Wu-Tang in Rage Against the Machine in Connecticut when Rage Against the Machine got basically banned from ever playing again in Connecticut. It was a great show. But I have a question about on your downtime from your work and acting, I guess, and your rapping and all that. Do you guys...
American Gangster and the rest, yep.
Yeah. Do you guys, like, what do? Do you like to bike ride? Do you go for hikes in the woods? I mean,
yeah, definitely.
You guys are definitely well educated and speak really well. So, I mean, what do you do on your downtime?
I would say on my downtime, you know, I'm definitely in a book, playing chess, doing some kind of exercise. I look every day to take a small vacation every day, actually. I don't care if it's 1 hour. You know, we say give yourself at least an hour a day to yourself to go into your own zone, your own world. So I love chess, you know, watching a kung fu flick in my downtime, you know, taking, you know, playing with my children, of course. You know, I play video games still with the children. Fortunately, we have a trail in my backyard, and we walk up the trail to the top of the hill and throw 100 kicks, 100 punches. Just try to keep in tune and keep myself in tune on time and downtime.
But there was a time when your sort of kicking back time got pretty wild, your Bobby Digital years. Your book, The Dao of Wu, is part memoir, spiritual journey, kind of seeker's account of life and philosophy. But you had you found that your wife had stepped out on you, it threw you into a real tailspin, and you describe yourself lying in the backyard sort of after a big binge in New Jersey, finally letting go of ego. But the next thing you know, you're in super party mode in L.A.
Yeah, it's crazy. When the Bobby Digital had bursted out of my system, shall we say, it was a little more like making Wu-Tang Clan. I was trapped inside the basement, we'll say, for years, just making music and, you know, helping everybody's solo career and constantly just no real exuberant life, shall I say. But before Wu-Tang Clan, when I was young, even though I was going through poverty, I still had a more adventurous life, riding the ferry boats, doing crazy things and going out there. And when I was in myself, I also felt that I was restrained to do certain things because I knew better. So when I came with Bobby Digital, it became an outlet or alter ego that let me express things that was part of my youthism, as well as to enjoy the level of life I had got to. I actually realized that, you know, I was a millionaire and I could do what I want. I could play around and why not? Let's have fun. You know, being somebody that was so conservative and so nervous about the world and things like that, I kind of let loose. And it's because I won't blame it on my domestic problems, not like that. It was something I had to get out. But by having domestic problems and having household problems, it felt like, what's the use of trying to be so good when people were still being bad to me? I later learned, though, that keep your goodness. Don't let nobody else force you out of your path, force you off your path. And it took tragedies for me to snap back out of it and get back on the path.
Let me quote here from you, the RZA in the Dao Wu. It's a basic hip-hop lesson that's tough to learn. The second you pick up a mic, it's about you. You're telling people who you are, where you're from, how you dominate and control. But Taoism, you write, says that to remember the great way means to remember your connection with all of creation. Well, we got wisdom from the hip-hop artist right here. David in Newport News, Virginia. David, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
RZA, I wanted to say that I'm a large fan, and as soon as I hang up the phone, I'm going to buy your book. And I just wanted to ask one question. Do you consider yourself a spiritual leader in the community?
You know, that's a tough thing to take upon. I wouldn't consider myself that, but if others consider that of me, I would strive to represent that for them to the best of my ability. I don't like to kind of add praises to myself on things, but I would say that, you know, I'm a man that had a lot of experiences, and so experience, they say, is the best teacher. So through these experiences that I've had, I could help tell a young person or somebody else who haven't gone through this experience, they could get a pre-warning from me, a pre-knowledge of it, and maybe they'll say, well, you know what? RZA has touched the stove already and proved that it's hot. There's no reason for me to touch the stove. He's tried different ideas. He's read through the Quran and through the Bible and was able to find the common denominator between them, and able to see that, you know, the brotherhood of all religions and all spirituality. Maybe his study can help me without having to study. We say something like this, you know, my child proved this to me. It may take you 40 years to figure something out, right? To figure out just how to maybe throw this ball through that hoop, whatever. It takes you a long time to figure it out. But once you figure it out, it's done. And when your child sees you do it, the 40 years you took may only be one day for him, because now he's seeing it done. It's just like when man had learned how to fly with their planes, the whole world changed. After thousands of years of trying to fly, you know, nobody's making airplanes. But as soon as this idea is manifested and made into reality, airplanes in every country come up. You know, everybody goes into this evolution of consciousness. So that's what I strive to do. I strive to say, yo, look, take it from somebody who went through it, who knows, who touched it and tasted it. You know, you don't have to taste it. You can if you want now. You know what I mean? But you don't have to. I've tasted it for you. And I'll let you know whether it's hot or cold.
We're talking with the RZA. His new book is The Tao of Wu. We opened the show with the cut from Cream. Cash rules everything around me from back in 93. But let's listen to some of where this has gone. Here's a track from the Wu-Tang Clan's 2008 album, Eight Diagrams. It's a song praising Allah.
The answer to all questions, the spark of all suggestions of righteousness, the pathway to the road of perfection, who gives you all and never asks more of you, the faithful companion that fights every war with you before the mortal view of the prehistorical historical. He's the all in all, you searching for the oracle. A mission impossible, it's purely philosophical, but you call him on your deathbed when you land in the hospital.
Eight Diagrams from the Wu-Tang Clan, 2008. JR's on the line from Boston. JR, you're on with the RZA.
Well, I just wanted to say between 1997 and about 2001, I was heavily into the music scene here in Boston. Got into it with a band called Godsmack. Just a little heavy, they are. Decided to see what else was out there, broaden my horizons. Went to a Wu-Tang show. It was the last show of the tour. Everybody was there but DB. and they just blew me away. The talent, how tight they were, they didn't miss a beat. Method Man lost his jewelry and didn't miss a beat. And from a person who did show production and worked with bands and hung out with bands, I was totally blown away.
Big ups from the heavy metal JR there, RZA.
Thank you, JR. I respect that.
Thanks, JR. Let's get one more. Jen in Boston. Jen, you're on the air.
Hello, thanks. I have two questions for RZA. I wanted to know whether or not he's still in touch with Wu-Tang Clan members like Method Man. And the second one is, are you self-taught or do you have a formal education? Thanks for taking my question. I want to hang up so I can listen.
Thank you, Jen. RZA. Method Man, Ghostface Killah, all the rest. Are you all together? Or?
Yeah, I definitely stay in touch with them. I actually called Method Man last night. He's in the studio working on a new album, him and Raekwon and Ghost, which I'm going to go in and see if I can add some music and flavor to. So I do stay in tune with them. We consider each other brothers, if not flesh brothers, spiritual brothers. And as far as her second question was, am I self-taught? To a degree, I would say yes. You know, I didn't have a formal high school diploma. I basically couldn't get past the ninth grade because of my lost in life, shall I say. But I would always go home and read and study. I would take the school books and study all day, go to school once a week on Fridays, take a test and get 90. And the teacher would be puzzled, like, how did this guy do that? And the thing was, it wasn't that I didn't want to learn. It just was the environment that I was able to learn in. And it was more better for me to be quietly in my room, quietly in a situation to where I could read and really take in the education. And throughout the years, I constantly do the same thing. I keep reading books and keep studying and keep expanding my knowledge to the best that I can.
You had a big, big family, 10 brothers and sisters, if I've got the count right. Were you the odd duck off reading, your philosophy or not?
Well, my brothers also eventually read and studied with me as well. But my father always said, he said that when I was a baby, he said I would eat so much, but I would stay skinny. And he came to a conclusion that this is a brain child here. And he always said that I had something special and unique about me.
Yeah, a big furnace upstairs burning up all the calories.
Burning it up. Right?
Burning it up. We're talking this hour with the RZA, mastermind behind the Wu-Tang Clan. He's out with a new book. It's the story of seeking. In all kinds of directions, called The Tao of Wu. Behind me right here, You Can't Stop Me Now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'ma hold my head, stay true to where my heart is. Either you pay with your life or you pay dues and homage. No matter how hard you try, from getting this dude. No, your feet's not big enough to fit in his shoe. I don't rock with you rap niggas, they be Poe on the wire, just not HBO. They on the fire, heads around the way. We know, they know they time up. Guess that's why they hate me so. But yo, they will never take me though. I had to go like the RZA there. He writes, on the way up, you do all things driven by ego, he writes. But when you get to your destination, you have to let go of the ego. It's a balancing act you can achieve only if you let go a little bit. Act more generously with your time and creativity. RZA, that does not exactly sound like the soul of hip-hop, at least as we often see it.
And because I guess a lot of times us in hip-hop, some of us have not grown yet, you know. It's such an enjoyable music, such a fun thing to do. And with everything, you know, that hip-hop has been shown on TV, us blinging and getting all the money and all the big booties and all that, you know what I mean? You know, it kind of, you know, the temptation is strong not to want to grow up and open your mind. But you have to, and eventually you're going to, you know. I watch it happen to other artists as well. Even our top artists now, is, you know, we look at a great artist now known as Kanye West, and his point of his career, you know, when he walks on stage and does the Taylor Swift thing, it reminded me of ODB walking on stage at the Grammys. It reminded me of being sometime at the top and at the pinnacle, but still having so much pressure on yourself that, you know, you don't handle it in such a way. You know, your ego is so big. You feel so great and so powerful. But then eventually, something will snap inside your mind or something will happen in your life that will humble you back down. And if you survive that, you know, some of us don't survive that. Sometimes it's the end for us. But if you survive that, you has best to take another look at things and let go of that ego and realize that sometimes your ego is not your amigo.
ODB, of course, was your cousin Russell Jones, went by Old Dirty Bastard, died 2 days before his 36th birthday back in 04 in New York in a recording studio, overdose, cocaine, and painkillers. He had been seen as a kind of spiritual inspiration for the Wu-Tang Clan. I mean, you all had been sort of working on this project since you were in junior high school, but it didn't add up to salvation for him.
It didn't add up to physical salvation for him, I would say. I would say he, you know, one thing about him was he kind of was ahead of his time. When you go back and hear some of his lyrics or some of the things he said in some of his interviews, you go, wait a minute. He actually was saying a lot of prophetic things, actually. And so it's just that his state and his name, his state of acting or his state of, and the name, his name, you people overlooked it. So I think he really did reach it. It's just he had, you know, when you reach this certain kind of level, you get this certain kind of freedom. But freedom must operate under the law of justice. He was the biggest expression of freedom that I've really ever seen any man express in, for my eyes. You know what I mean? He would take his car, pull over on the side of the George Washington Bridge, block traffic, get out to take a leak.
Oh, geez, that's free.
That's freedom. Okay?
It's a long way down, too.
Exactly. And that's this, but he had this thing about him. And, you know, he would drive, I'm telling you, he would drive 110, 115 miles per hour, just missing other cars. I'm in a seat laughing as well as feeling like, man, this is it. And he would never make the accident. He would always survive these things. So he had a certain thing about him that was super unique.
Is that the freedom you're promoting? I can imagine people listening saying, oh,
no,
boy.
No, I'm not promoting that freedom because like I said, freedom must operate under the law of justice. And the justice of reward or penalty for your actions and deeds. You know what I mean? And therefore, being that we have justice, we have to learn about equality. I'm saying equality means to be equal, but it's also a limitation as well. It's a physical limitation.
What do you mean we have justice?
Well, freedom, I'm free to smack you in your face, but then justice will come. You can smack me back.
So you're talking a kind of divine justice, a sort of balance in the world.
Yep, it happens, you know. If, you know, the night and day happens every day. If you, the pendulum swings both ways. If you learn how to still yourself now, how to make it still, how to become neutral, neutralize yourself, then you find the true power of the atom itself. It's not in the movement of the electron or in the weight of the proton. It's in the decision of the neutron. When we have a nuclear bomb, it's the fission of the neutron itself now getting the charge of it, which causes everything to just go disarray, positively or negatively. So there's a justice that freedom must be operated on. Then justice automatically demands equality. It automatically forces you into equality. So that same way I say I can smack you in your face, but you can smack me back means, okay, I'm not going to smack you. I'm going to keep it equal with you, keep it balanced with you, keep it level.
But we look around this life and there's so much absence of equality. So much.
Oh, definitely. And there's absence of justice as well. And that comes from, I think, us, those having power or having so much weight of power that they don't see justice coming. And so the pendulum is just swinging so far to the right, it hasn't begun to swing back to the left yet. But it will swing back. It always swings back. You know, even the earth itself, to me, gives us examples. Man said, you know, we're doing global warming and the temperatures is changing and all that. You know, the earth, all the planet earth has to do is just give us 10 minutes of shaking. And it destroys our whole civilization. You know, we keep drilling into it and doing things to it as if it ain't going to burp, hiccup one day. You know what I mean? But it will hiccup one day. Everything, nature has a way of fixing itself. You know, we had an ice age, they say, millions of years ago, 1,000 years ago, to where the whole earth became frozen. But that when it became frozen, it causes the purification of the water again. It causes the reemergence of new life, it refreshes itself. Or in the Bible it says, you know, God was very upset with man. He gave us a great flood to where he had to wash us away, wash it all away, save a few righteous men, save some of his animals and some things of, you know, that will help genetically reproduce the world. but he had to wash it clean. Mm.
And some make it, some make it through, and some don't. Russell Jones, ODB, your cousin did not. Here's a kind of an elegy for Old Dirty Bastard. This is a performance name of the RZA's cousin Russell Jones. Died of a drug overdose in 2004. This is from Wu-Tang Clan's Life Changes, 08.
Oh man, how do I say goodbye? It's always the good ones that have to die. It's hard to live without you, God. I shouldn't have doubted you when you said that the passion of Christ was all about you. From the Guardmobile to Linden Plaza.
Life Changes, Wu-Tang Clan. Lamar is calling. Lamar in Norfolk, Virginia. You're on the air with the RZA.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Pretty well.
I don't know where to start, man. I could be on this phone with an hour with this guy. I've been down since like 92, 93 myself.
Mm.
When they first came into the scene, it was like hip-hop, to be honest, it was getting kind of corny at that time. When I first started listening, me and my cousin Eric B and Rakim, and you know, the real lyricists. So at that time, it kind of started getting corny, but these guys, they came back out of nowhere, and I was in college at the time, and it was like, everybody was like, what's that? What's that? And like, every CD I get is just wonderful. I'm just, and dude, you could tell by the way he's speaking just now, you will not find another rapper today that talk like this guy that you got right in front of you. You won't find it. So, after I said all that, my simple question is, how did you get all these incredible MCs with the same basic philosophy? How did y'all, just like you said, together, like the Wu, how did y'all come together as one like that? And y'all been, I mean, y'all go, you got your own thing, but whenever you can snap your finger and everybody will come right back together like a swarm of bees, you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. How do you find all these guys and get them to come together like that? Were y'all friends growing up, or how did that work?
Yeah, we definitely was friends growing up, and we all had a common denominator, and the common denominator actually was me. They all didn't know each other, but they all knew me and had a trust in me, and had a trust in my way of thinking. We all had came across mathematics, so that was a common denominator as well.
When you say mathematics, you mean the kind of numerology of Nation of Islam? Is that
yes? Yep, the mathematics of the gods and those. We all had came across it. And everybody, you know, at one point or another, you know, was seeking some kind of knowledge. And I was kind of advanced down the path. And the Jizzah as well. The Jizzah is my enlightener. But I had a way of expressing it and, you know, constantly talking about it. And it kind of had, so it was mathematics was a common denominator, but hip-hop itself was a denominator. We all love rhyming and MCing. And I had the house in a location where you could come and you could make demo tapes. And so even though some guys from Stapleton was enemies with the guys from Park Hill.
Stapleton and Park Hill on Staten Island.
Two different projects. Mm-hmm. We still would come to my house in Stapleton, meet there, and make songs together. And those songs built up a catalog of music that we had. So you may hear a tape that, you know, produced by me, but it have an MC from Park Hill, an MC from, Method Man was living in New Brighton at the time, so an MC from New Brighton, an MC from Stapleton, MC from Brooklyn. And you had these neighborhood tapes floating around. Everybody's like, yo, you heard the new one they made. It just got more and more popular. And then, you know, I coined it Wu-Tang Slang. And many people wanted to be a part of it. But the ones that were, you know, from Inspector Deck to Raekwon, the Jizza, we all had a common denominator of mathematics and a common denominator of me being the guy that was the location or the base of where you would express this hip-hop at.
And Shaolin and Kung Fu and this whole, and the movies you were watching. I mean, what struck me reading this is how you didn't have a lot, but you built this huge palace of, I guess, a kind of a Wu-Tang mythology around yourselves. And I guess I mean that with mythology with respect here, but you built a vision that to inhabit and then just lived in it.
It was something, you know, I think that came to my attention too. There was a book my Aunt Chevy gave me. Aunt Chevy is ODB's mother.
Mm-hmm.
It was her book, but she let me borrow it, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, we was reading, we were studying. And she gave me a book called Three Magic Words. And in this book, it was talking about the power of thinking, how you think and use your mind. And if you use your mind with a strong will, it can make things happen that you want to happen. And I think that I was so embedded and strongly willed with these ideas, you know, and that I just willed them and lived them out. We lived like this. You know, me and Dirty would walk around, you know, with our hands behind our back, or we, you know, you see Wu-Tang tie T-shirts around their heads, like, mm-hmm. we have long kung fu braids and stuff like that. You know, so these, you know, our do-rags, we braid our do-rags. We'd go to Chinatown and buy books of kung fu and movies and things like that. But we would actually also walk through the neighborhoods with this kind of mentality, this samurai swordsman mentality. So it's like, you know, your mind is the governing factor of all things. And what's in your mind will eventually manifest into the flesh. It's the word will become flesh. It just takes time. And if it's a powerful, positive word, it will become flesh and it will remain. If it's negative, of course, like all electrons, it goes to join another atom and dissolve into hydrogen and oxygen, becoming water or becoming sodium chloride, becoming salt and things like that. It will continue to change.
Gone. Let's go to John in Southington, Connecticut. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. RZA, I wanted to say that you've been one of my heroes for a long time. Asked you guys point before about RZA's influence being different than that in a lot of hip-hop. I wanted to say the theme she discusses as far as the personal development of the individual, the questioning of our economic systems, the questioning of our society, that's what hip-hop is. And thank you for keeping it alive.
John, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Charles in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Charles, you're on the air with the RZA.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Pretty well.
I was an English teacher in the past, and it taught in kind of a rougher inner city school. I was always looking for more teachable moments, and it turned out that I would pick and choose through a lot of the Wu-Tang lyrics and use them as a basis for teaching vocabulary. Look at how broad. Broad diverse these vocabularies are that they're using and what it allows them to do. Whereas, you know, and compare and contrast with someone equally famous but with less of a lexicon. And
did it work, Charles, with your students?
Absolutely. It was a wonderful motivator. What the Wu-Tang did, I think, was it's going to be tough to reproduce.
I appreciate your call. Our time grows short. The RZA is with us in New York. You know, you draw from so many places, and you do it without any, you're not abashed about it. I mean, you put the Quran and the Bible and the Lotus Sutra and, you know, a kung fu film right up there and draw from them all. Do some of the people within those look at you and say, what are you doing? How can you put all these side by side? Where's your purity?
Well, I think sometimes some people do question it because they have their traditions that they're stuck on and they feel like I'm not keeping it with their tradition. But I always find something within their tradition and within their own books and saying that justifies this way of thinking. Even if you look, we go to Bodhidharma, the Buddhism, you'll see that there's a story that one monk was like, don't touch the mud, you know, like the things that are foul in life, stay away from them. And then Bodhidharma said, wait a minute, our most revered plant, the lotus, grows on mud. So therefore, even in the mud, even in a bunch of crap, you know what I mean? For instance, take a bunch of crap that comes out of our bodies through excretion. A cow will eat grass, and he'll drop a big load. But his load actually fertilizes the grass and feeds the grass and feed other vegetation so they grow stronger. So it's like even in defecation, you know, there is a use. There's a potential. There's a positive. And that's why I come to learn and see, you know, within everything, try to seek the grain of truth.
The RZA, reaching out for wisdom wherever it may lie. And we hear it, and we appreciate the sincerity of your seeking. And read it in the book, The Tao of Wu. It's there. I was impressed, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so
much.
Thanks for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
The RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan. His new book is The Tao of Wu, and it's quite a journey. We've got with The Birth from his solo album 2003, The Birth of a Prince. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you for joining us.
Rewrite the script for Egypt. Who made the Holy Bible? Or Quran, how long ago? Who made the holy title of ourself, Lord and Master? Who control the vital parts of your heart? Who wrote the wise recitals? Ruler, zigzag, ziggler, arm, leg, leg.